vision. There is a common nature between vision and soul. Soul is spiritual sense, identity. It's identity because one cannot properly identify anything whatsoever unless they are utilizing the spiritual senses of soul, which means they have to be looking through the lens of spirit and utilizing the lens of spirit for also hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. All five of the senses enable correct identification if one is looking through the lens of spirit. Vision is directly connected with soul, as has just been noted, because the viewing has to be through the lens of spirit. So, looking with spiritual sense. And of course, mind is involved because mind is action. Vision, looking, seeing is all an active function. All functionality is in mind, all capacity, all capability, all facility. Therefore, vision is directly related to mind as well as soul and spirit. This really is amplifying the network, which includes all of the senses, all of the qualities of God, all of the synonymous terms. This extends to the four operators of the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and science. The Word is the facts. In order to even get an appreciation for the Word, which is the facts, one must be willing to yield all material sense. One cannot be viewing facts if they are going to try to do it from a matter base. Mary Baker Eddy states that there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is His image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. And one could be substituting those words, and they could say vision is not material, it is spiritual. And one could start at the beginning of that scientific statement of being and say there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in vision that is not based on spirit. One can have a lot of fun with the scientific statement of being as long as one is careful to be inserting any replacement words in the right place and in the correct connotation. It's a very powerful statement, and it's not just dependent upon using the word matter or life, truth, and intelligence. One could say there is no capacity, no functionality, no facility, no action. in matter, or mortal mind, or mesmerism, hypnotism, spiritualism, fantasy, fraud, war, friction, chaos, imbalance, accident. This is a totally flexible statement that lends itself to using a lot of words that would bring about effective results. One could substitute anything that has to do with a current problem one may be trying to solve. One could, for example, use the term an idea of God, or man, or the manifestation of God. When one can have clear in their thought the connection between seeing the unreality of anything ungodlike and the reality of what is godlike, that can be applied to any number of words, circumstances, events, individuals, relationships, a government, any kind of situation at all. The words could be substituted and it could be very effective. We're utilizing vision as we're doing the substitution. As we see that there's an opportunity to individualize something so that a current situation that one might be endeavoring to solve is translated into a scientific statement. That's what filtering is all about. If one appears to be seeing a suggestion about anything that is ungodlike, they could immediately begin to translate the truth about what God is and how it applies to the suggestion that is being presented to one's vision, and make the correction right there and then. It could have a powerful impact on the situation. As has been stated in other recordings, Mr. Rawson, and his picture is in the header, which is on every page of the website, who is one of the finest practitioners that there ever was viewing out a window, and there was a man that had a load of rocks accidentally dumped on top of him and covered him up. And when Mr. Rawson saw this take place, he said five words: there is nothing but God. The man jumped out of from underneath the pile of rocks, totally unharmed. Not a scratch. It was so clear in the thought of Mr. Rawson about the perfection of all existence that that conviction and confident statement that he made brought about immediate healing. He said only those five words, But his conviction obviously came from him knowing the truth that is contained in a scientific statement of being. One needs to individualize in order to have it effective for them and apply it to any particular situation. It's just not a matter of repeating words, but it's a situation where one needs to have a clear thought and immediate access to the truth will automatically project itself as the need appears. It's unconscious. It's automatic and effective. Mary Baker Eddy repeats what is said in the Bible about a little bit here, a little bit there, here a little, there a little. And she emphasizes, do not expect some grand, big event to take place, because our focus needs to be on the moment by moment purification of thought and applying it to continuous activity. It's not wrong to expect good things, but the little by little improvement of our vision and our identity, that's the soul, and the mind, which is understanding that all capacity, functionality, facility, and so forth is a part of mind, and that's the only mind there is, and that is our mind. That was one of the big revelations that Bicknell Young brought forth. He was a practitioner of about 100 years ago, and he was named the Dean of Practitioners because he had a big following, and people thought that he did very fine work. Just like they called Mary Baker Eddy Mother, because she mothered her students, cultivating every angle about their understanding to be a catalyst so that they would have a more pure understanding of God and enable them to apply it to their own situation and in helping others. Principle is another one where vision needs to be applied, because principle is system and structure. So a spiritual vision needs to be utilized in order to be sure that the structure of anything that we are working on is proper. That means it has to be a spiritual structure. Matter is not a part of a spiritual structure. Mortal mind. Anything unlike God is not a part of a spiritual structure. And if the structure is not spiritual, it is worthless. May give some false hopes, but there won't be anything lasting. That applies to any relationship. there's no relationship that would be of any value if it is not based on spirit. If two people in a relationship are seeing the spiritual qualities that are common and appreciated, recognized, respected, then that relationship is one that will be more lasting than if it is based on something less spiritual than the pureness of spirit itself, which is flawless. Spirit is totally transparent because it is flawless. So one needs to recognize without hesitation the spiritual qualities of anyone else that's involved in the relationship. Principle also includes system. So system is like, how does the principle operate? The way it operates must be flawless. It must be spiritual, just like the structure itself needs to be not built on sand, but on a solid foundation of spirit. The same with life. Life must be based on a spiritual vision, or one is going to be looking the wrong way, seeing the wrong thing, has no value, nothing to build upon, nothing to depend upon, but something that is full of deviation from the truth. It's going to be absent of the dynamic activity of the all active mind. It's not going to be consistent like truth. Truth has no variableness, neither shadow of turning. So life has to be reflecting truth if it's going to be substantial. It's going to be something that can be dependent upon. All the elements of life must be sourced from spirit, and mind. Enlightenment is a term that represents mind. It's like turning on the light so one can see. The vision is going to be clouded if the light of truth is not shining. We can't be wearing blinders and have vision that is of value. Life is eternal only if life is reflecting spirit, being seen through the lens of spirit, reflecting the flawlessness of spirit. And it needs to be reflecting the activity of mind, the presence of God. God is omnipresent. So if that is not realized, life is not going to be stable. It's going to be erratic. But if we realize that life, the life of God, is omnipresent, because everything about God is omnipresent, but we're not going to experience it unless we let the light of mind shine on it. We have to be able to see it. We have to let our vision be the vision of God. Mary Baker Eddy states in an article entitled Vision, she says, are you able to focus no matter what comes your way? Mr. Winslow gives an example of being in a room where there's a telephone and a radio. The radio is broadcasting one way. There is no microphone where one could make an input to the radio. It's not a two-way radio. It's not duplex. Duplex meaning conversations going both ways. And the only thing that it broadcasts is the truth about God. In that same room, let's say it's on the opposite side of the room, is a telephone that is duplex. Conversations can go both ways. In fact, even at the same time, both people could be talking. And that is a symbol in this example from Mr. Winslow. His references are in the header on every page also. Wrote 4 books on God. And he says, imagine the telephone being an instrument, as mentioned, that is duplex, and it is ringing continuously. He says, don't pick it up. It's a symbol for mortal mind suggestions, animal magnetism, mesmerism, hypnotism. Anything unlike God comes through that phone as a suggestion. Suggestion, not fact, but suggestion. And if we do not pick up the phone, which means like opening our door of consciousness, to let it in, if we don't let the foot in the door, like a salesman, don't let the foot in the door, keep it sealed shut, and when it rings, deny that it is real, and you're not going to let it influence you one iota, because it is not truth. It is not godlike. It is not reality. It has no place on its own, but is only begging for one to listen and give it a place, to give it life, to give it substance, to give it a sense of reality. But if we don't do it, if we refuse to cooperate with the ringing phone that is trying to make a suggestion, then it cannot enter into our experience or into the experience of someone whose our thought rests upon. We control. If we do that, we control what gets into our consciousness. Our atmosphere is controlled by us. not by someone else. In fact, the same fine practitioner, Mr. Winslow, wrote 3 different articles on malpractice. He points out that the word mal means bad. In Spanish, the word malo. I think mal is the Latin derivative or the Latin root to the derivative, which is malo in Spanish. And the other Romance languages probably have a similar word. It all means bad. So malpractice, he says, is bad practice. Well, who's the one that controls the thought of an individual? We do. We have the opportunity to control our own thought. That's why we can't pick up the phone. Controlling our thought means that we are not going to let any suggestion of mortal mind enter therein, no matter what form it tries to take. I named off a few a moment ago, and it doesn't matter what form it takes. Anything that is unlike God is in the basket of evil. If we don't love someone, that's evil. Because the other side of that is that we are hating. If we don't love, we're hating. We could be hating by absence of providing love. It's like swearing in a court of law where they say, is this the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? In other words, is this the whole truth? The whole truth is not just letting it be dormant. If something or someone comes to thought, we must address it and make sure that we're thinking about the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about that individual or the relationship or whatever it is that comes to thought, the event, the government, a government agency. Anything at all, we must apply the truth to make sure that the last thing in our thought about whatever came to thought to us is wholesome. Wholesome. Completely pure. Snow White. Mary Baker Eddy says that we must settle our accounts continuously. In other words, we must be making sure that our consciousness is only entertaining and housing and having an inventory the right thing. I read an article about a very fine journalist, and he said the duty of a journalist is to do the right thing and be unbiased in their reporting. Two very simple elements to excellent journalism. Journalists are persecuted all the time. They're imprisoned, they're tortured, they're put to death. They've had their families ruined, their lives ruined from a human standpoint. because of the telephone. Truth is the biggest enemy of error. Goodness is the enemy of evil. Love is the enemy of hate. Spirit is the enemy of matter. Mortal mind, the enemy of divine mind. Spiritual senses, the enemy of material senses. Chaos attacks principle and harmony. Principle is the enemy of chaos. Death. Death attacks life. Life is the enemy of death. Ambition is the enemy of laziness. Error and truth, opposites, love and hate. One of the most brilliant businessmen living today, who has very fine first-class businesses all over the world, said that the more important the project, the more difficult it is to get it accomplished. Wherever truth is, wherever ambition is, wherever a wholesome desire is, wherever perfection is striven for, the opposites of all those things are right there, making suggestions with an effort to defeat it or to prevent it from even getting started. And if it's started, to prevent it from getting completed. And if it's completed, try to tear it down. Mary Baker Eddy makes it clear that our duty is to protect any healing that we have. We don't just have a healing and then forget about it. We have to protect it against reversal. We must understand and utilize the terms such as deflection, diversion, dilution, stoppage, reversal. Those are temptations. Those are suggestions that are made. Just like when Jesus was the weakest after spending 40 days and nights in the desert, the devil tempted him with three different temptations. Mary Baker Eddy states that we are tried under the stress of circumstance. When everything is going well, it's easier to refute error. But when one is in a dire circumstance, that is when the challenge is the greatest. And that's where we are challenged, under the stress of circumstance. In the article, The Psychologist and the Magician, which is on our website, the man was tested, and he went through a journey in a cave. And after he finished it successfully, overcoming every form of mesmerism and hypnotism that one could imagine, and he was ready to go out the entrance, come back and, exit through the entrance that he came in, there was a suggestion of sitting down and having a feast. And he rationalized to himself, well, you know, I've been successful. It's been an event that presented every kind of trick in the book to try to get me to accept whatever mesmeric or hypnotic suggestion was there as being real, and I've been able to refute them all. So, yeah, sitting down and having a lovely feast, beautiful food, and good atmosphere, that seemed to me natural. Celebrating. Well, he fell for it, but because he had been successful in everything else, it was still deemed that he passed the test. But that was a flaw in his performance. Under the stress of circumstance, see, he had completed it, so he let down his guard. We cannot let down our guard one moment, because the suggestion is always there. Mary Baker Eddy makes a very specific statement to that effect, that we are constantly bombarded with evil suggestions. We can never relax the standard. We can never let down the defenses. We must guard the door of thought continuously without interruption and not give in any distance whatsoever, however small you want to measure it. It's like the smallest measurement of time is a moment, and whatever smallest measurement one might want to define space, you know, like a trillionth of a centimeter, whatever. We can't give in any amount, period. Not any, period. That's it. Our vision will be spiritual in the degree to which we can focus, as Mary Baker Eddy asked in that article. She says, can you focus no matter what comes your way? To the degree that we do focus on the real mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that's the degree to which we will experience perfect vision. Focus must be to work out our own salvation, no one else's. Mary Baker Eddy said, we will be busy enough if we take care of our own thoughts. We need to think about our own TSA, thought, speech, and action. There was a coach for a women's running team. I believe it was 400 meters. And she was just hired as the new coach. And of course, as usual, she was not readily accepted because she was an unknown to the faculty and the parents of the girls. And as a result, there was a lot of attention on everything she did. And as you will learn in a moment, she was not a conventional coach. So she was criticized from one end to the other. She knew that the wise thing to do was for each girl to be focusing on her own performance, running her own race, not the race of anyone else on the track, not trying to take off and be with everyone at the beginning, or whatever anyone else was doing. They were not to be concerned with that at all. In practice, she would time each girl separately. She would have them begin taking off out of the starting blocks at different times, so they were never running together, but they were all running separately. And she would tell them how fast she wanted them to run. And if they came in too early or too late, she would have them run another lap. She would do this time and again until they would have the speed absolutely correct so that the time for the one time around the track would be exactly what she expected. And they had various meets with the various schools. And in each case, her focus was on the discipline of running their own race. And she started out at a slower pace. In the next race, she would have them train to run a little bit faster. The next one, a little bit faster, and so forth. So they went through various competitions. Each time, the trial was not whether they won or lost, but whether they were running it in the time that she wanted them to run. They qualified for the finals. I believe it was a state championship, but they didn't have the fastest time. In fact, they had, I believe, the slowest time of everyone who was entering into the finals for the state championship. And the parents, of course, were very antsy, just had no way of expecting there to be a victory. But the coach stuck to her guns, and she trained the girls to ignore everybody else. But they knew exactly the pace that they should run for meeting the standard that the coach had established, and they could do it right on the button. So when it came to the final match for the state championship, she was there to remind them to run their race, no one else's race. Don't even look at anyone else. Doesn't matter whether they start faster or start slower. You run the race you were trained to run. So she got them all ready to go, and they shot the gun and they started the race. And it showed the race up until just before the last part. And it did not show them crossing the finish line. So you didn't really know what place they were in at the finish line, whether they were first, second, third, or whatever. But after they crossed the finish line, the girls looked around for their coach, and their coach was gone. And this is the lesson that was meant to be conveyed in this movie. It didn't matter whether you won or lost, and forget about celebrating. The key was whether or not you ran the race the way you were supposed to run it. And apparently the coach was convinced that they were doing that when she left the scene. And she didn't care whether they won or lost, because they had been trained to run the race a particular way at a very specific pace. Such a beautiful ending, because it carried through with the theme that we're not running someone else's race, we're not working out someone else's salvation, and we're not going to celebrate just because we did what we were supposed to do. The natural thing is what should be done. Are we able to focus no matter what comes our way? Mary Baker Eddy certainly did have daily opportunities to practice that, for she was attacked by everyone constantly. Women could not own property. They could not vote. She had hurdles to overcome that women today cannot even imagine because they didn't experience it. Mr. Rawson certainly did focus no matter what came his way. He experienced a very important event that needed to be healed immediately. And he obviously focused on those five important words and everything that stood behind them as being the truth. There is nothing but God. Amen.